So it's really, really lovely to be here, actually. I'm not doing that anymore. So it's really lovely to be here, to share as a family, to really enjoy the love of God and to worship him together, to make him our quest this morning, our number one goal, to dominate our thoughts and our feelings and our everything, really. I want to start off by a question, because sometimes questions can really help us to get underneath things. So I guess most of us might have heard of this, but I'll say it anyway. Have you ever heard of the saying, don't judge a book by its cover? It's increasingly going to become a thing of the past with iPads and other types of reader, but I guess there'll always be books of one type or another. So we're going to look today at a story that it would be so easy to have looked at from an outside perspective, to see someone from only one level, and miss, well, an incredible destiny for that person, to miss an incredible worth and value in that person. So before we move on to the passage in question, I just want to give us some context and orient us to where we are in the Gospel of Matthew, so that Jesus has been demonstrating his kingdom authority over the spiritual realm and over the physical realm. If you remember the wind and the waves when there was a storm on Lake Galilee, and with the deliverance of the demonized men and the sending the demons into the pigs. Following on from that, there is the story of the healing of the paralytic, where Jesus also claims authority to forgive sins. So all round, Jesus is demonstrating his kingdom authority in every type of situation to show people that he is the coming king, the Messiah. We're now back in his hometown of Capernaum. And Capernaum is located astride the highway from Damascus to Jerusalem on the northern shores of Lake Galilee. And it's a major commercial centre, and that's important also for our story. So let's read from the Gospel. We're picking up from Matthew's Gospel. And it's Matthew chapter 9, taken from verse 9. So Matthew chapter 9, taken from verse 9. So as Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked the disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." So this is the call of Matthew. Matthew, the writer of the Gospel. And as at this point in time in the Gospel, Matthew, the tax collector. And I want to just whiz through this story to try to find some things that we can learn from in this calling of Matthew by Jesus to follow him. I I need to give you some background about what it was like to be a tax collector in those days. In first century Palestine, it was considered to be probably the lowest of the low in terms of where you could get. Matthew was probably located on a major road in Capernaum. There's a major highway going through, and he's probably acting as a kind of customs tax man, exerting duties from imported goods as people took it along the main road. Tax collectors sort of put in to a bid for the Roman government for the right to collect taxes, and whatever was collected above that bid, they could keep themselves. So quite a lot of the tax collectors exerted quite a high personal price on top of the actual tax itself. So they were really considered to be traitors of the worst kind. They were taking money from their own countrymen and giving it to Roman oppressors. But not only that, they were often extorting more money from people and leaving their own countrymen, very, very worse the wear for that transaction. So that's some background to Matthew in his profession as a tax collector. And so first of all, I want to take up the first verse that it says, as Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him. So notice, in the very first part of this passage, Jesus saw, and I want to just pick up on that fact that Jesus notices people. You know, when he's traveling, walking, going from place to place, he's looking for people, he's seeing people. I wonder if you've ever done people watching. You've sat on a park bench, or you've sat in town because there's a natural break. You're waiting for someone to come back, or you're waiting for a family member. You know, maybe you haven't got your phone with you, or you've fiddled with it enough, and you get up and you look at people, you know. From that perspective, we can often see from the outside, can't we? We can see life going on around us, and we can see people coming and going. Sometimes there's some very interesting times of people watching where there might be some sort of argument or disagreement, or there might be mums with kids and you imagine maybe what's going on in the background. But by and large, you just see the outer bit. You just see the outer people coming and going in their daily lives. But I want us to notice that as we go on in this story, that Jesus sees, but he doesn't only see on the outside. He sees underneath the man. There's something in Matthew that Jesus sees beyond this image of a tax collector. Remember the story of Zacchaeus, the other chief tax collector that Jesus comes across. Of the rich young ruler that came up to Jesus and asked what the way to be saved was. And do you remember the woman suffering from bleeding for all those years? If we can think of one thing that Jesus demonstrated in those three occurrences, was that he saw underneath. He saw the real people involved. He didn't just see the outside. We don't know whether Matthew had seen Jesus before. It was a major highway, so maybe Jesus had come and gone with his disciples before in this place, and maybe there had been some eye contact there. We don't really know. Perhaps Matthew felt a bit desperate inside. Perhaps there was something that Jesus saw underneath, a desperation in Matthew. Because in that profession, Matthew was a person who would have found favour with very few people in his society. And maybe in that state, Matthew got a glimpse of Jesus and saw that wealth was maybe the fleeting thing in his life. Maybe he'd missed out on relationships, or he sensed that there was more to his life than what he was doing. But what I wanted us to notice is that God actually looks at our inside world. He sees. You know, he doesn't. So many things in life we can get an outside perception, can't we, of a person. Jesus sees the potential in us, and he wants us to be with him. What do you think others saw when they looked at Matthew in his tax collector's booth? I bet if you could replay what they thought, what went on in their minds, it wouldn't be very complimentary of Matthew. But Jesus sees a person. He doesn't see a traitor. He doesn't see a despised tax collector. He sees a person. So I wanted us to just hold on to that thought that Jesus sees. You know, we can very easily miss that at the very beginning of this section. Jesus sees. Maybe you need to see that look from Jesus. The look of love. The look of someone who sees into you. Not in a critical way, not in a condemning way, but in a way that he sees the person that God has created and sees the value in you. Perhaps you've seen too many looks of disapproval in your life. I just want to hold that thought with together that Jesus sees. He sees the person inside you. So who does Jesus see? Well, he sees Matthew sitting at his booth. He sees the man. He doesn't see a hated tax collector. He doesn't see an object to despise. Have you ever seen someone on the outside, the outside appearance as it were, but then got to know later on the person underneath? I wonder if you could, either now or as you ponder this later, have a think. Is there someone that you made a judgment about, that you looked at in your daily life from the outside, and later on you had an encounter with them, and that changed your perception somewhat? Because we can immediately get a perception of people, can't we, on the outside. I remember we used to have a lollipop lady when my son James was little, and she was on the scale of 1 to 10 in terms of being quiet or loud. This lady was quite loud in her interactions with other people. And she could be quite blunt as well. And almost to the point of shouting, you know, and it sometimes could be amusing on the outside. But again, I remember thinking and looking at her and just seeing this loud lollipop lady. And that's all I saw, really. And interestingly, fast forward a few years, and I had some nice chats with this lady who came to speak to me when we were doing healing on the streets. And suddenly, I didn't see this loud lollipop lady anymore. I saw a person who had quite a lot of tragedy in her life as well. And no longer did I see from one perspective, I then saw her from a quite a different perspective. I wondered if that had happened to you, because it can be quite helpful to try to see people in the way that God sees them. So where was Matthew? Well, he was sitting at his booth. He was sitting there doing what tax collectors do. Collecting taxes, adding numbers, looking at rates. And there he was in the ordinariness of his everyday life. And I want to just pick up another thing from this story. You know, Jesus meets Matthew in that place of, or in the midst of the ordinariness of his everyday profession. Matthew's not at a dynamic prayer meeting. He's not at a religious event. You know, he's just doing what is the bread and butter of what he does in his everyday life. And what do you do with your day? You know, what goes on in your day on a day-to-day basis? Maybe it's doing the kitchen floor for a family on a Monday morning. Maybe it's adding figures like me at a job. You know, looking at spreadsheets. But I want us to keep open the fact that God wants to meet you just as much in that place as he does in any other place in your life. In the midst of that ordinariness, Matthew received a greater calling than levying taxes. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, it should be emphasised. I think I want to emphasise at this point that this was at a particular point in history in Palestine, in first century Palestine, in a particular context. Tax collecting, I guess, always elicits some challenging feelings in us, in from various reasons. But there are some very nice tax collectors. So it's not at all any kind of denigrating the job of tax collecting. What this is a particular point in time. But Matthew received a greater calling. And I just want to just hold that thought again, that perhaps you've had a challenging supervision or appraisal or some family feedback if your work is just keeping a family or whatever it is, wherever you are, maybe your performance appraisal has been quite challenging. But I want to take it even above that. You know, God's got a greater challenge for your life, as we'll see with Matthew. It's not there's anything wrong with what he was doing. And in Matthew's case, he was called away from that. But it might well be that God has got something more for you where you are. But I wanted to take the thought that God's got a greater challenge for us than just the bread and butter of what we do in our jobs. You know, he wants to add to that his calling on our lives. So what does Jesus say? Well, two simple words, follow me. And with those two simple words, Jesus calls this hated man from his tax collecting booth. He doesn't ask Matthew to straighten out his life and then come back and become his follower. Again, sometimes that can be a temptation in not only coming to Christ, but perhaps drawing closer to Christ in that relationship that he calls us to, that we've somehow got to get things straightened out before he will accept us on a deeper level, or for some people he will accept us at all. But actually, Jesus called Matthew just where he was. There was nothing in him that Jesus said, no, you just got to address this first and then you can come and be my follower. And Jesus calls Matthew to a relationship. He says, follow me, not follow a set of rules or regulations, not follow a particular pattern, not follow a religious way. He says, follow me. So we're called to a relationship. He's called in much the same way that Jesus called Simon and Andrew from the fishing boats. I guess the one difference is that the call of the fishermen, well, that was a little bit more of an honourable profession in those days, whereas the call of the tax collector at that time and place wasn't. But it was a very simple call to Matthew. So Jesus says, follow me. So what happens then? Well, Matthew follows. It says very simply again, Matthew got up and followed him. And it's an amazing invitation considering who Matthew was and where he was. Again, Jesus sees the real Matthew. And it's also a remarkable act of faith on Matthew's behalf. We don't know whether he encountered Jesus a few times before. We're not given any background information. We don't know what was going on in Matthew's mind. But we do know this. When he got that decisive calling, he got up and left. And what did he leave? Well, he left behind quite a lucrative career. Certainly in terms of materialistic needs, Matthew will have had all those met by that job at that time. He also left behind any possibility of going back. If you remember the calling of the fishermen, they could actually go back to their fishing. It would have been possible for them to get back on the boat. In fact, if you remember Peter, who, having denied Jesus three times, in his state of, I guess, feeling he'd blown it all, he did go back to fishing for a little bit until Jesus gave him that wonderful threefold calling again and restoration. But for Matthew, there was no going back. That was it. Once he'd cut that bridge, that was it. There was no going back to that job. So he really, it was a remarkable act of faith. And he really lost everything by this world's standards. And yet, I want us to notice that he gained so much more. He gained an adventure, a calling, a salvation that surely was beyond Matthew's wildest dreams. Going from figures and rates and balances to an incredible calling. And little does Matthew know that the very skills that God had given him in his former life would be well used in his calling to come. Leaving stuff behind is quite difficult, isn't it? I remember my own sense of calling when I felt God calling me, and I knew that there was some leaving behind to do. There were some friends that were probably didn't really see things the way I did once I'd felt that calling from God. And so much as I tried to be a friend still, those friendships kind of got lost. I was on a kind of search, really, for many years to try to find God, or trying to find what life was around. And when God found me, there was some soul searching to do. I'd sort of searched in a number of areas, and I was really into karate at that point. I'd done a lot of years of martial arts training, and I got a lot of friends there as well. And I knew that philosophy, that not only in terms of what it stood for underneath, in terms of some Buddhist roots, but more than that, the time it would have taken out of my life, I just knew that I had to leave it behind. And they were very difficult transitions to make. So Matthew takes a very brave step, and he looks forward and just takes an act of faith, walks away from his booth. But he walks into an incredible calling. And as I said, he'd been given some gifts. He was a very good observer. Clearly, that would have been necessary in his job. He was good at observing things. He was good at recording things. He had a skillful pen, as it were. And these traits would be well used by God in Matthew's new life. This keen observation and this tax collector's pen. I mean, it would have been incredible for Matthew to look back later and see actually how much God used those in terms of recording, you know, the greatest story ever told is the story of Jesus in Matthew's gospel. So what about you? What are the gifts and skills God has given you? Maybe you didn't think, or maybe you don't think they add up to much in God's kingdom, but God would beg to differ with you. He's got some things there that are going to be really well used. Okay, so Matthew follows, but not only Matthew. From verse 9 and 10, in verse 10 it says, while Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. And when I read that and really was really taking the passage in, I wanted to just take a step back and say, whoa, what happened between verse 9 and 10? Suddenly there's this massive transition from the call of Matthew, and suddenly Jesus is at this big dinner party with a load of other tax collectors as well. There's a saying, isn't there, that birds of a feather flock together. And I think that probably would have been true in Matthew's case. You know, his only friends probably were other tax collectors at that time. And they were, as I said, they were considered the lowest of the low. And maybe we have our own secret list of social outcasts, people we don't like to be mixed up with, because we move from this individual calling of Matthew to this amazing dinner that Matthew holds for Jesus with these other people. But these were all social outcasts at the time. And it would be good to just have a think in our own spirits again, in our own heart, as we go from here. Maybe there's just that little secret list of people we don't like to be mixed up with in our own lives. You know, maybe it just doesn't look good for us, or that's an area that we don't want to step over. That's a bridge we don't want to step over. But Jesus is pleased to be associated with these people. So now Matthew basks in the king's shadow. And what does he do? He goes and tells all his friends. He invites them to a feast to meet Jesus. So Matthew's response is really lavish when you think about it. Instead of thinking about all the things he might have lost, all the things he might have had to give up to follow Jesus, what does Matthew do? I'll hold a dinner for Jesus, this amazing man who saw the value in me and gave me a call in. I know what I'll do. The only thing I can do to share this with others and kind of say thank you to Jesus in a way. So he holds this amazing meal, this feast, which Jesus is happy to go to and sit down with all these other people. And it's a lavish response, isn't it? You know, when we get given back our life, when God gives us value and meaning again. You know, I for a lot of years lacked a sense of value. I felt for some trauma when I was a kid and various other things had gone on. I didn't really feel I had any value. And it was amazing to me when I had this feeling and sense that God was calling me. And I went from this person who he seemed to be lightweight and floating around and not really knowing where I belonged or who I was, to a person of value. I had I had meaning again because I was loved. I was accepted. I had a purpose. And I just wanted God to use whatever I had. I didn't actually think I had much, like Matthew, but I wanted him to use whatever I had. And often we get this feeling that we want to give something back to say thank you. And the response when people get given back their lives is often quite lavish, isn't it? I just wanted us to look at a couple of examples. The woman with the jar or the bottle of pure nard. Incredibly expensive stuff. I remember Mark Marks from Healing on the Streets just putting a drop or two on his Bible paper and then the beautiful aroma of that, you could smell it for weeks, and that was just a drop or two. This is extremely expensive stuff. And Jesus had given this woman, she felt he'd given her life back. She was a woman who had nothing, she was despised, and there was this Jesus, this not only teacher but friend who had received her and accepted her and given her life back. And what did she want to do? She wanted to pour this whole bottle over him. It was the response of someone who's been kind of won back. Their heart has been given value again. Their person has been given value again. They didn't feel they had any value, and suddenly she wants to pour everything out for Jesus. And remember the other tax collector, Zacchaeus. I never know how to pronounce it. Zacchaeus. You know, he says, I'll give half my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anyone out with my tax collecting, I'll pay them back four times what I've cheated them out. You know, there's something there that is lavish. That's a lavish response. And Matthew gives Jesus a lavish response. He says, right, all that I've got left, I'm going to pour into a feast. I'm going to invite all my friends because Jesus, you've given me my life back. You've given me value again. You've given me a calling. And finally, we find ourselves at this healing feast for the sick. So here is Jesus, a guest of honour at Matthew's feast with all the local tax collectors. And remember, this is doing serious damage to Jesus' reputation right now. To sit down at this feast is really doing his reputation serious, his credibility in the eyes of a lot of other people, serious damage. But I can imagine that Jesus is really enjoying this. You know, this is what he came for. He came to seek and save the lost. He came to seek and save those who have been written off by everybody else. But not everyone is enjoying the feast. There's some Pharisees that are really bothered that Jesus is spending time socialising with these people. And so they quiz Jesus. They say, actually, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? You know, it would have been a very derogatory question. Why does he do that? And Jesus sees this as a teaching moment. And this is what he says. He said, it's not the healthy you need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. But weren't the Pharisees sinners as well? Weren't they also stuck in sin, even if they wouldn't have admitted to it? So why wasn't Jesus seeking out them and eating with them? Why does Jesus spend his time with the riffraff and not in the courts of power and prestige where there's equally amount of sin? Everybody needed Jesus. Well, he gives the answer in verse 12. And he gives it in kind of two parts. First of all, he's the doctor. And secondly, he's here for the sick. And those who know and feel their illness will see the need for the doctor. And those who think they're healthy, even on death's doorstep, will have no need of healing. So what can we learn from this? Well, for one thing, we can learn that there are different kinds of sinners. The real distinction is not how big or scandalous or embarrassing the sin is, nor who gets hurt. The real distinction that Jesus cares about is, does the sinner know his sins? Does he know that he needs a doctor? Or does the man who is sick see his need for a physician? Because to not see the need means that you don't really think you need a doctor. It would be totally absurd for me to go down the surgery in Wallingford and just say, you know, see my doctor and just say, well, actually, I'm totally fine. I don't really need you. It's really good to see all this work you're doing with others, but hey, I'm fine. Don't need you. Thank you very much. It's a very simple thing, isn't it? We've just got to recognise our need. And Jesus receives, you know. There was no condemnation of those people at that dinner. There was no condemnation of Matthew. Jesus simply wants to receive those who recognise their need of him. And there's something for us to learn from that, whether we are on a search to know God, or whether we have met with Jesus and given our lives to him. I think it's very important that we recognise our continuing need of him. Because remember what we were looking at last week, the Gareth, without him we can do nothing. So not only do we need Jesus totally as sinners, but we also need him because without him, our lives won't produce anything of lasting value in our time here. So there's some lessons from the calling of Matthew. And I just want to leave with a couple of thoughts that maybe that has spoken to you in some way. You know, The Bible speaks to us in many different ways on many different levels, but I want to ask you to have a think about that calling of Matthew and some of the things we've looked at. Does that speak to you? Is God saying something to you in that calling of Matthew? Then I really want to open that for prayer. To let's pray together. I'll lead us in prayer. But if there's anything that God has spoken to you in that story, or if it's touched anything else, not only in the preaching, but in the service itself, there's a remarkable transaction goes on when we receive that challenge and then act on it. So in other words, we sense, okay, God's saying to me something here. What do I need to do about it? Well, it would be great to pray, wouldn't it? The starting point would be to receive some prayer. And I just want to leave that challenge with you. You know, as we respond to that challenge, it's like an act of faith in God again. It's like saying, I've heard what you said, Lord. I can see that it's important that you've revealed this to me. Now I'm going to do something about it. Now I'm going to take that call seriously. I'm going to make that step of faith and ask somebody for prayer. Because without that input of the Holy Spirit, without that extra power that God gives us that we simply don't have ourselves, then the calling can just fritter away. Can you see what I'm saying? We can receive a calling in faith. God can nudge us and challenge us with something in the service. But if we walk away from that and just let it go from our minds, it's like we're kind of frittering away an opportunity to grow, to And who knows where that will take us? Who knows where that prayer will lead us? One simple prayer. Who knows what God's going to do with that? That might be the breakthrough that you've been looking for, or that might be a single building block that God's got in a chain of events for you that lead to something amazing like Matthew's call. So I want to just leave that challenge with us, because it's incredibly important about what we do with what we've received, as was being shared earlier. It's an opportunity to respond. Father God,